outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Well, I found out this week our faces will not live in infamy forever.
Okay, do tell.
Facebook has changed their live streaming feed thingy to they're only going to keep them for 30 days. So they're not
really.
Yeah, they're not backlocking all. So all these podcasts that we've done back there are going to get lost in the netherworld. Oh. Which the audios will continue. But so people who want to join us this way, unless we switch platforms, they last for about 30 days. And they'll be gone, which is probably fine. I'm not too worried about
Interesting.
That.
Oh, okay.
So whatever we mess up here will only be available for 30 days. And then people who will have to want to who press on the link beyond that to try to find the video version of this podcast, you're going to find the link doesn't work anymore.
It would be interesting to get people's feedback on whether they enjoy the video version of the two of us talking or more just the audio or, yeah, that would be intriguing to see what the feedback would be on that.
Well, and you can write Kyle Rice if you want to have that conversation.
You don't care, huh?
I don't. I have the face for radio, so I have never booked my life on a video version of anything. So,
oh, that's fair. That would give your makeup artist a little bit of a break, so that's good.
It would, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Since I am my own, and I don't do any. So there you go. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is The God Journey. So you got a best thing I heard this week, Kyle.
Ooh, I do. And I got into a conversation with some students today, and we were talking a lot about it. It was this really weird tangent that we got into. One student just brought up a couple of comments about the world that we're living in today and some things that they were navigating. And we got into a conversation about ritual and about family tradition. And I had one student make the comment that they were pondering, and they said, I wonder if ritual can be a grounding anchor for my heart when I'm in the middle of chaos. And that was I really appreciated that comment because I think so often, Jess and I have started going to a traditional Sunday morning gathering on a fairly weekly basis again. And there, I've had my own space conversation with that, but I think about the times when my life has been in real chaos or there's been a lot of turbulence or unknown that's been going on and finding myself going back to some of those core traditions, core rituals, core experiences that remind me of who God is and his heart and the things, the history that he and I have together and the history that he has with mankind. And I found those to be an incredible compass in the midst of uncertainty or chaos. And it was really cool to hear a student, a 18-year-old individual, pondering that same question, because I know this individual's story a little bit, and ritual and grounding was definitely not a part of their upbringing. And so for them to ponder the value of that moving forward in their life was really interesting.
And it pleads all the more problem when the rituals or family you have becomes the chaos.
Yes. Yeah.
Or even the church situations. I mean, churches often split and go through all that stuff. And when it becomes the place where you're judged, gossiped about, treated poorly, whatever, then what do you do when your rituals get overturned?
Yeah, I think that's also why it's so disorienting for people when the institution or the brand of Christianity comes crashing down around them or fails them or whatever that might look like. I think that's why religious abuse is so disruptive, because it's so deeply ingrained in the day-to-day of how we navigate life, of how we how we evaluate our morals or our sense of self, or even the ways that we celebrate throughout the year. Those are deeply tied to, unfortunately, at times, a triggering or traumatic event for individuals as well.
So are you observing Lent this year?
That's a great question.
Starts tomorrow.
It does start tomorrow. That isn't like, that's not a tradition that that Jess and I have often observed, but man, there's just been something intriguing to me over the last couple of years about looking more into some of the celebrations that even the Jewish community takes part in and what the history behind it is and how it is reminding of who God is and how he's interacted with his people over time and over different cultures and what that looks like. So yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. What about you?
I'm not going to be observing Lent this year.
Okay.
I never have, unless I get to give up chemotherapy for Lent, then I might do.
Then you're all in. Huh?
But I'm not sure that's the spirit of it. No, I didn't grow up with that tradition either. So it's not something that I hang a lot of head on. And a lot of, I'm kind of a different place with regular routines like that, that kind of force you into a certain way of thinking about your faith journey that may not fit your faith journey. You know, all that, like someone I know recently went to a Catholic service and they said, it's really interesting to know that in every Catholic church today, this same thing was read and all over the world today. And that doesn't give me comfort like it would other people. Because they have a litany of things that it was, I guess, part of always not trusting local people to get it right. So let's script everything. So it's a homogenous kind of activity worldwide. And
really?
Yeah. And I don't know that I'm as much into that.
Yeah. I didn't know that was part of the tradition. I didn't know that was a thing in the Catholic community.
Well, anytime we try to impose, whether it's the anticipation of Advent or the whatever of Easter and Good Friday, and I mean, I'm happy for those events to be reminded of what happened 2,000 plus years ago and what Jesus has done on our journey. But it doesn't always fit. The temper of it doesn't always fit where my journey is currently at.
Yeah.
No, I don't try to impose that. I try to read better what's going on in my life and where's God and what's going on here rather than trying to impose some kind of outward structure to it. But that's just me.
Okay. So what is it? This might be, I'm about to reveal the terrible inner workings of my mind, I guess.
Okay. Well, it'll only be on video for 30 days. So you're good.
Okay. Perfect. So it won't last forever. No, I was, Jess and I were observing communion at the Sunday morning gathering that we were at, and this is awful, but my first thought was, I wonder who patented this COVID-safe communion that has the little cup with the juice that's, have you seen these yet?
It's sealed like off,
Yes, it's all sealed off, and then it's got the wafer thing that's on top that tastes like somebody's bottom of their shoe. And I was like, who patented this and who is making millions off of this? Because they are. And I was like, who got the bright idea of let's create COVID safe communion things and sell it to hundreds, if not thousands, of churches all over the United States? That I don't know what that says about
it. No, it's working. And now people don't have to sit there and squirt those little cups full of juice. It's already been done by a machine somewhere. So
yes, exactly.
Not really where I'm at. Best thing I heard recently, this was from a book by Anne Lamott somehow. It's her newest book, and I like reading some of hers, but this came from that. It says, the word faith implies a possession of something, like having faith. Whereas I experience faith as a yearning for something beautiful that I can sense but not fully grasp, for me, faith is more about longing and thirsting than knowing and possessing.
I like that.
I love the mystery in that. I think sometimes, even some of the rituals we just got done talking about, somehow try to remove the mystery from this thing that God is and invites us into, and it's like you can never quite get your hands on it and around it and possess it, but you can celebrate it. You can recognize it. You can. It's about longing and thirsting. And I think that really resonated with me because I think that's where my growing trust in God is. It's not that I've got it all nailed down. It's there's this longing and thirsting, and there's glimpses of things that make sense in my heart, and then there's more longing and more glimpsing, and just seeing how it unfolds is more beautiful than trying to possess something that we almost have to distort it to try and possess it.
Yeah, that's why I I've been intrigued even with the idea of ritual and what role that plays in our own emotional health, family health, spiritual health, because I feel like ritual has the subtle tendency to lose the awe, to lose the longing, to lose the thirst, that because we become familiar with it or because it happens on a regular basis, we lose that sense of what authored this? What was the heart behind this that originally inspired this? Because if I was a part of the community that had my firstborn saved because I put the blood over the hearth of my door, yeah, I would probably still observe that Passover on a regular basis with a whole lot of awe and a whole lot of mystery and a whole lot of gratitude. And yet over 2,000 years later, what does it look like to reconnect with a sense of awe, understanding, longing, thirst in that context? Is that even possible? Or do we allow God to cultivate our own experiences and memories and relational context with him? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. I think the best part of ritual is what tries not to remove mystery. Mm. It undergirds mystery.
Yeah.
And when we seek that place, and I think we do, because we live in a chaotic world. So the tendency on humanity's part, particularly people who are trying to follow Jesus, is to give me the confidence that this routine will save me, instead of take the risk of the adventure of a relationship that is the saving grace. It's not that I've done X, Y, or Z. It's that I know him, and I'm letting that knowledge of him grow in my heart over time. And when we lose that sense of mystery and longing, and we think we possess something and it becomes routine, and now we've got the little God part of our life carved out into these few actions that I do, and then the rest of my life belongs to me and I get away with it, then there's not that sense of adventure anymore. There's not the sense of mystery and longing and thirsting for who God is and how I know him. And uncertainty is where God rules in the sense that he's the certain thing in the universe that makes uncertainty bearable. But if you swap him for something certain in human terms, you're going to get lost.
Yeah. And I think, sadly, that's often where we see the downfall of religious certainty, is because we're trying to place our human knowledge, our human certainty around a God that, as the ancient Celts called him, he's a wild goose. Like, you can't nail him down. You don't know where he's going to go. Like,
especially from our perspective, with such a finite ability to grasp. And he's so much greater. I don't think God's a wild goose necessarily, but it certainly looks like that from us, because we think we have this nice little box carved out for him, and then he just doesn't fit that.
No, he blows right out of it. We're like, why? Why did you blow out of that?
Because it was never a box he was going to be in anyway. It was just our own grasp of certainty. So with all that in mind, I'm wondering how you're weathering the new presidential administration, Kyle.
It has been interesting, to say the least. So my wife is a member of one of the federal grants that got paused. And so she still has a job. She's still functioning. However, she did get a notification that she may not have a job as of the end of July. So they don't know what that's going to look like. So the community that I am in, there's a real mix of experiences of this. To be bluntly honest, I had a kind of a brutal impact with one of his policies. So I've been listening to his conversation in regards to immigration and how many arrests and what the arrest quota looks like. And initially it was for people who supposedly had a background in criminal charges against them or potential terrorist considerations, et cetera. And Jess and I were filling up gas here in Sheridan at one of our local gas stations. And this van pulls up, and it looks like a normal, kind of a little bit more rundown van, you know, like a traditional family van. As I pause and I look over, out comes these two individuals that are completely in entire tactical attire. They've got bulletproof vest, they've got chest plates on, they have ARs in the cab. They are fully kitted out. And then I look at the van again, and it is armored, and it has a prisoner cage in the back of it. And they were ICE agents. And I don't know what they were doing in the community, who they were investigating or going after, but it looked like a normal soccer mom van. And then out jumps two paramilitary looking individuals that they were filling up their soccer mom van that actually had a prisoner holding cell built into the back of it. And that was, ooh.
So you didn't hide behind your car, did you, Kyle?
I did not, no. Oh, okay. But that was a collision of reality for sure.
Yeah, and I think people I know here who in California have that concern out all the time. And in fact, Lewis was stopped by some ICE agents who talked to him a little bit about his status and what he's doing. And, you know, imagine the tension of that kind of conversation when you're not legal here and you're not going to lie about it. It's fortunately they didn't do much from there. They just kind of let him go and they were looking for some other people, I guess, or something. But
We got into some interesting conversation with some of my students today when we were talking about waking up with fear and going to bed with fear, because there has been a lot of, whether it be the impact on economy or jobs, you know, that in one sense, I can deeply appreciate the desire to be more transparent and to work through some of the overspending and corruption and mismanagement of funds that's taking place in our federal government. So there's part of me as a taxpayer and as an individual that can deeply appreciate some of that. And yet, man, these are very interesting times. I honestly don't know what to think at times when I've been watching the news and hearing the things and changes that have been going on. What about you? How are you weathering this? What are you seeing as, because he is genuinely following through with what he said he was going to do on his campaign trail. It is happening
in some kind of extreme ways. You know, some of his policies, yes, I like, but they're being implemented in ways that are dangerous. The whole brouhaha with the president of Ukraine. I forgot his name. It just slipped my mind. That's how old I'm getting. But the big brouhaha they had last Friday, I think what troubles me is the extreme implementation of policy in isolation, in the sense that it's not coming from a larger conversation the culture's having. It's coming from the whim of one man who feel like he has a mandate to do whatever he wants to do. And I don't think the culture's fully with him. I think this goes off a cliff at some point. How much of the country it takes them, I'm not really sure. But it's really, I've watched it kind of from a distance. I've only got 20 years maybe that I'll be around. I think if somebody younger like you, you know, you got another 40, 50 years of what is the aftermath of this mean if Jesus tarries and doesn't come?
Yeah.
To me, we're making some major decisions about how we fit in the world on the basis of one man's interpretation. There's not a conversation with Congress. There's not even a conversation in his own party. Republicans are so afraid of Trump primarying them, if they even express a public disagreement with him, that they kowtow in silence. And when you try and talk to people about it, we had some couple of conversations last week, and I don't carry the angst of this, because what I hear oftentimes is, oh, do you think Harris would have been better? And I'm going, no, I don't think that would have been better at all. But I don't think this is good either. And so what does that mean for the future of our republic? And yet I've had a bit of a distance from it this time, which has been interesting. Okay. I was in a conversation with some guys a couple of weeks ago, and the angst about Trump and what's going on, its implications in Europe and elsewhere. And I just went, and they said, Wayne, what are you thinking? And I'm going, I don't think I'm involved in this. I'm not involved in this world. And they said, what? I said, I'm just not this time. And I've had, politics has been my hobby. I've loved it. The bridge builder stuff I did and being involved in some upper echelons of government activity and talking to people who make decisions. And that was incredibly fun for me, as well as hard work, as well as incredibly taxing. But this time around, I just feel like this is not where my life is. My life's not in the kingdom of this world. And I, for the first time in my life, I was telling someone the other day, I feel like a political orphan. I'm not, I'm not a Democratic guy. I'm not a Republican guy. I think both of them are dangerous. I think both of them are toying with the future of the Republic. I think Congress laying down at this point and not asserting its rightful role in the checks and balances that we need on an executive branch is ridiculous that they're not doing. I think they're cowards, to be honest. And I think Donald Trump's a bully. And it's not going to unfold well. But my life's not staked in either one of those, or it's not staked in the kingdom of politics. And I'm not excited about a culture in which bullying tactics dominate. And I think we're in that. And I think both parties try it. So this is not an indictment of one or the other. One's just better at it, bullying people to his will. And so I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the power we're giving rich people. I look at the whole outlay of this thing. And I think the reason why I have some detachment from it is because in the praying, in the writing, in the vision thing I've had over the last couple of years, I feel like there's a redemptive story going on behind these events that we can't see yet. And I feel like the chaos of the world increasing is part of God's story, is part of letting humanity have its way and perhaps run itself into ruin for the need of a savior, for the need of a rescue. But I'm older. And I think if I was your age, I don't know how I would handle what's this future look like for my children, my young girls growing up in this world, and the fact that there is such a chaos, and it'll only be 4 years with this administration, but then does that go off a cliff, or does the successors to that take it on? And honestly, I'm more concerned, I'm more excited about where is the redemptive hand of God? Where's the kingdom of God here? Because it's not in either. To convince me it's in one political party or the other, you're just nuts. I just think those people who are there, and I know people like that who feel like the Republican Party and Donald Trump is God's gift to us and this culture, and I think they're out of their minds. But I also notice they can't talk about it. They can't have a conversation because in that world, conformity is king. You either conform to the Donald Trump line, or somehow you need to be marginalized or yelled at or bullied or screamed into submission. And I'm just not playing that game. So when I watch other people play it, I'm not in that world anymore. That's not, and they go, what do you mean? And I said, I really am trying to embrace what it means to be a kingdom person in the world and what it means to be looking not for the political cues as to what's happening, but what is God doing behind the growing chaos of our world? And I'm intrigued by that. And I think these things may have some consequences that will set up for that redemption plan unfolding. But I'm not a fan, honestly, of going to war with Canada or Mexico on tariffs. It concerns me that we have this major unilateral shifts in what America is in the world. And all we did was vote for a candidate and some voted for them because they hated who the Democrats were, but not because they wanted to give Donald Trump's wisdom free sway in the world.
Yeah.
And I hope that ends. I hope there's people that stand up to him who realize this is not where our country needs to go. But I don't know if that's going to happen. And if it doesn't, God's still unfolding what he wants to do in the world. There's a redemption story bigger than what we're seeing politically right now.
And I think that's, we were talking a little bit about it today in class. And one of the things that we were talking about is Brené Brown points out this reactionary process where people try to create a solution that is as big or bigger than the perceived problem. And the challenge, though, with that is that it doesn't move the challenge to the middle. It doesn't temper the challenge. It just swings to the opposite end of the pendulum, which is reactionary and has just as many problems as the current space does. And we were talking about that and like, what does that look like? Especially like we're watching some of these issues. Is there a challenge? Do we have an issue with immigration? Yes, there needs to be a dialogue about immigration. Is there an issue with us being so independent on international trade and international oil and international resources? Yeah, we've moved away from manufacturing. We've moved away from a lot of the things that made the United States economy really, really strong. But yes, are they big challenges? Sure. But do we respond in such a way that what I feel like our current administration is responding is like, okay, here's, we've got a big problem. We're going to bring a massive sized reactionary solution to that problem. And it's moving us into a different side of the pendulum that has just as many issues, just as many conflicts, just as many challenges with it as the current problem or current space that we're in. And I love the dialogue about, especially the, I feel like this fits so well with the conversation that you're having in regards to Letters to the Bride and The End of Days. More and more as I'm observing, like, and looking, I'm like, okay, Lord, could this potentially be like, there's a sense that there, whatever that looks like, humanity is moving into a very interesting space. The Sunday morning gathering that we are doing, that Jess and I are going to, they're going through a revelation. And one of the big things that they were processing this last week is allowing humanity to get what it deserves, so that God is pulling back and allowing humanity to have the, have what it's asking for. So humanity's asking for blood. I'm going to give them a river of blood and they get to drink that blood. Humanity is asking for, you know, whatever it might be, and I'm going to give it to them. I'm going to let them experience what they, what they're asking for. But the challenge with this conversation that this church leader was processing was that the bulk of humanity hardens their heart against God's invitation to redemption, to love, to an experience of his freedom in his life. And so then he just sends them all to hell. I don't know. I was really wrestling with that this weekend because I was like, is that the God I know, where he's like, yeah, I'm just going to let you, you got, you can have what you want. You get what you deserve. Here you go. Here's all of the plagues and all the things that you're asking for. You've created your own version of hell. Go for it. I'm just going to let you rot in it for a little while. And I'm going to let you rot in it long enough that then you harden your heart towards me. You're cursing me. And so then I'm going to send you to hell for eternity. That means that it, by number standards, that means that Satan's got the win, not Jesus has the win. That God has, that God doesn't have the win, because the vast majority of people, are they turning their hearts towards God and turning towards that redemptive process and turning towards wholehearted life? Or are they rejecting God? And so the vast majority of humanity is rejecting and going to hell. I that was the dialogue that was being had this weekend, and there is something in my spirit that really is wrestling with that. And yet, here's the kicker: that's God's justice. I don't know, Wayne. I don't know if I can get on board with that.
Yeah, it's an easy conclusion to reach if you're part of the home team and you're looking at other people as the away team. And I think that's what MAGA world does really easily. It's, we're the home team. They're the away team. They're choosing bad things. They get what they deserve. And we don't care about them. And I think more than focusing on God's justice in that sense, I'm going to give you what you deserve. The story of redemption is God's love for humanity and desire to find them and restore them and bring them to light and rescue them from the darkness. And I'm hoping that the story of humanity trending toward the darkness and trending toward greater selfishness and unawareness of the other. I only am aware of people that are in my tribe and only care about them. So that is definitely being exaggerated in our day on both sides. Yeah. So how does God's love penetrate that darkness? Not how do we sit back and go, let's let them have what they deserve. And God's, you know, you want rivers of blood, I'm going to give you rivers of blood. The rivers of blood is our doing. It's not his doing. What's going on in Ukraine is not God's unfolding purpose for that country. It is what's happened in the chaos of sin and lies and deceit and darkness. And then to watch our country participate with those lies. And people say, well, you think the Ukrainian government's perfect? No, I don't, but I've been there. I know people there. I know they didn't ask to be invaded. And I know they weren't being aggressive toward Russia. And to watch our president abandon them? was just, my heart just broke because I know people there, and I hope that's not the final chapter of this thing. But if people don't speak up, it may be in political, geopolitical terms. But the larger question and the larger thing to look at is, how is God's love making its way in the world? How do we have conversations about that? Not press people to the conformity of our beliefs. I hope this is a time when brothers and sisters in Christ really stand up for love, for compassion for the other, for standing up to the bully in the room and not just using the bully's levers of power to ingratiate ourselves and to somehow get what we want to do. I saw this article last week where I thought it was interesting. It was six lines that were edited out of George Washington's farewell speech. He wanted to make them, and then other people kind of talked him out of it because it wouldn't be a great way to leave the farewell, according to this article anyway. And he says, for this, for instance, in republics, it is not difficult for those who at any time hold the reins of power and command the ordinary public favor to overturn the established constitution in favor of their own aggrandizement. And he would know, right? He got to be president. He would know the temptations of what you can do with this power, which is why they sculpted a political system that had three branches that were supposed to be co-equal and checks and balances on each other. And we've lost that because humanity needs that. The aggrandizement of power and the feeling of getting to do what I want is so intoxicating. And he said this, to become a demagogue, this is what Washington was going to say, to become a demagogue, a president would need more than a powerful political party. He would depend on a cabal of powerful citizens, the wealthy puppet masters, media barons, and shadow influencers who could provide scaffolding for a president to dismantle democratic norms. The enablers of tyranny, Washington predicted, wouldn't be public servants, but private citizens who thought nothing of trading constitutional principles for a seat at the table of power.
Yikes.
Yeah. 250 years later, we're going, kind of very prescient there, Mr. President Washington. I wish you kind of maybe would have said these words, but at least they were recorded for history. But that's when I look at what's going on in Washington, that's what I see. And other people see it differently, and I've got friends who do, but in the long run, this is the way we're going. And if something doesn't change, we're going to have a very powerful executive branch that can pick whatever fight he wants to with Canada, Mexico, over terrorists, with Ukraine, over, I mean, our whole policy, and President Biden said we would be there with Ukraine till the bitter end supporting them. Well, now that's not true. We changed presidents, so now we change policies. And I don't think we function well in the world when you don't hold to your commitments as a people. And if you're going to change them, you have enough political dialogue with Congress and other people in power to know that the American people are supportive of the agenda you're taking on, not I'm going to make them do this whether they like it or not.
So in the mental health world, there is this concept called the continuity of care that is really important when people are considering, especially from a mental health provider thinking about their client. One of the big things that we take into consideration was, what does continuity of care look like for this client? By that, I mean, if I'm working with this person and they're going to change therapists, or they're going to move away, or I'm doing intensive counseling with them and they're going to go back home and they're going to go back into their family system and they're going to continue working, what does it look like to maintain a certain level of care and integrity and momentum to be able to move forward into a consistency of healing? And that's one of the big concerns that I have with where we're at as a nation in regards to our federal government, is if every 4 years we're having this rapid change, wherever direction we're going, there's no continuity of care. There's no continuity of mission for the nation in regards to our character, our morals, our economic value. That it's reactionary. And man, that makes me nervous. If we're doing whiplash as a nation, and that whiplash is impacting global community every 4 years, that is spooky to me.
So imagine being our ally and there's the shifts that come like that. And now you're like, okay, if you're Canada and suddenly you got all these tariffs and now we're in a trade war, not of their asking.
Yes.
Just capriciously, or so it seems. The idea that America can't be generous in the world. Yeah. Have other countries taken advantage of our generosity over years? Yes.
Yes.
But we have most of the goodies on the table. So it's okay, I think, for us to be a little broad-minded. Had maybe gotten too far. Maybe. Maybe we're doing too much. Europe's not doing enough of its own defense. I get that conversation. But this is the problem of so much, whether it was Trump now or Biden before or Trump before or Obama before that. So much of the government now is by executive action. It's not by passing of laws. And then if you pass a law, you have the stability of time. If it's just an executive decision, it can be overridden by the next executive.
Yes.
And that's what we're seeing.
Yes. And it's not going through the proper checks and balances and process. And it's not actually given the opportunity to gain traction and long-term impact.
And just like I said with bridge builders for so long, there's so much money being made off the fight.
Yeah.
The fight is the thing that generates income. So there's not a lot of people interested on either side of the aisle of finding consensus, of reaching for something bigger than my own desires. I passed a neighbor today. I don't know him, so it's clear on the other side of the development here. But I passed a neighbor. He had a shirt on that says, freedom versus everybody. And I thought, what does that even mean, freedom versus everybody? Is that, if it's my freedom versus everybody else, then you don't have freedom that you're not willing to give to other people. You don't have it.
Correct.
And yet there's a group of people that think they do, that freedom for what the country, particularly that Christian mindset of we're right, we've got the scriptures, so we know we're right about this issue, so we're going to ram it down the throats of our culture. Freedom versus everybody is actually freedom for no one. It's just tyranny. You want your way at everyone else's expense. And when you want that, you become a threat and a danger in society. That's why we got to step back away from the political brink and say, okay, Jesus, what are you doing in our day? How is love making itself known? How are people who are tired of the political games and not going to play the political games, how do they make Jesus known in the world through their own lives and heart and sharing and life? And that to me has me very excited. And it culminates for me. I spend an awful lot of time praying for those people in the world who are seeing who Jesus is and what he's doing, but they're being intimidated by the voices of family and friends around them because it doesn't fit into other people's expectations. And I spend a lot of time praying about that because I think people need to be encouraged. When you know that Jesus is making himself known to you and you see stuff happening around you, be bold. You can do it with a sense of humility and tenderness and kindness. You don't have to be a bold bully. You can actually be a bold, confident, kind, and tender person, much like Jesus was. Speak up when you do speak up. Yeah. But be kind about it. Don't feel like you've got to. I know people that are going to say, well, what about the temple, man? He come in there with his scourge and whatever that was. He didn't do it more than, maybe twice. We're unsure of the biblical record there. It could be twice. But his mission was to be in the world as a demonstration of the Father's affection for the lost and broken. And when there's a boldness about that, so I pray that people will not be intimidated by the voices around them that are trying to crowd them into a space that feels like they have to betray something inside themselves to pretend and go along with family and friends. That won't last long. So is there a boldness that the people who actually are listening to God and are following him can have in our culture? And I mean worldwide. I don't mean just America. Yeah. I mean just all over the world. That's what I'm praying for, because that's what the world needs more than anything else. Someone who can be lovingly kind and honest and just. And that's what the world's waiting to see. And the political game, if you're looking for it there, cool. Yeah, that's not going to work.
I deeply love that prayer. Because I think back to our conversation about one of the chapters of Letters to the Bride at the End of the Days, where we were discussing about how love is dangerous, mm-hmm. that kingdom love is disruptive and dangerous. And I think that especially in whether it's the end of days or not, kingdom love is going to be very disruptive and very dangerous to the perceived ideas and ways of getting through life that humanity is placing its hope in, because they're not going to work. They are going to fail. They are going to crumble. They're going to show themselves as the chaff that they are. And yet we desperately are in need of the gold and sustenance and foundation of his love to be moving in the world and through his people in an authentic way.
And that will take a boldness. That's not just
it will.
Retreating to my own home and my own, you know, I'm an orphan of politics, so I don't care what's going on in the world anymore. No, the difference is I'm not looking for politics as my answer.
Yeah.
I still care about the world around me. I care about God's love making himself known. I care about having conversations with people who see things differently than I do. That conformity is not what's important. What's important is that we're having the conversations that will lead us to a greater understanding of who God is and how he's working in the world. And that's my passion. My gosh, if we're bucking up against the end of the age, then the whole point of the end of the age is not justice against the reprobates. My gosh, it's about compassion for the broken and lost. And it's about God redeeming to himself what the enemy stole. And I don't think we know how all that works out yet. I think we make these pronouncements because we've grown up in a certain religious setting that needs the enemy to be punished and for us to have all the goodies. And if you have that kind of heart, to me, you're not seeing God's redemptive story. You're not. Mm-hmm. You're just worried about your own. And that will skew it in a way that makes you more danger in the world than a loving companion to people who need Jesus in their lives at this particularly difficult time.
I love that. I love the stance of pulling back and connecting with, Lord, where is your love moving in the world today? Because it's such a different and such a better conversation than so much of the dialogue that is going on in the world around us right now. That's a conversation that actually makes me excited, that actually interests me in comparison to so much of the dialogue that's happening in our world right now.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.